Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Left of Straight Show with your host, Scott Fullerton, as we discuss everything under the rainbow sun, from LGBT issues to foodies, entertainment to books. Join us as we talk to some of the most interesting leaders and celebrity LGBT guests and allies on the internet. So grab a cocktail, it's always happy hour somewhere, and enjoy the show. Now, here's your host, Scott Fullerton.
Well, howdy, everybody. Welcome to the Left of Straight Show. It is Tuesday, February 5th, 2019. I am your host, Scott Fullerton, and obviously I have rented lips and can't speak. How y'all doing today, Left of Straight family? Welcome to the show. I hope you were able to tune in yesterday. I had an absolutely phenomenal guest yesterday. We had the cast and creatives behind the hit web series Child of the 70s. We had series creator Michael Vaccaro, executive producer Charlie Vaughn, and co-stars Ann Walker, Terry Ray, and Chuck Sekula on. So much fun talking to them. And then I had on for the first time a new musician I've just come across, Z-E-E Machine. Just put some new music out this past weekend. Absolutely love his voice. And it was just a great show. So I hope you, if you missed it yesterday, you'll tune into the podcast at one of your favorite distributors. Of course, we're on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Spreaker, TuneIn, Blog Talk Radio, of course, soon to be iHeartRadio, all the fun ones. Just look for us there. Today's show, another good show for you. I'm talking with the newly crowned Mr. Gay Canada, Josh Reimer, will be on in just a few minutes. And then in the second hour, I'm going to be talking with the multinational, multicultural actress Katie Barberi, who is co-starring in the world premiere of a new play in Chicago called The Abuelas. So I'm very excited to have the show on. We'll be getting to that in just a couple of minutes. Let's see what else is happening. I went to an Instagram marketing class today, and I actually learned some new tips. So I hope you're all following on Instagram. Maybe changing some things up a little bit. Please follow me on Instagram and Twitter. It's the exact same, at Left of Straight. Left of Straight is always spelled out L-E-F-T-O-F-S-T-R and the number 8. That's L-E-F-T-O-F-S-T-R and the number 8. On my Facebook page, you can find our page at Left of Straight Show. Personal Facebook is Scott Fullerton if you want to shoot me over a friend request. Also, please be sure to go to the website every month and enter into the swag bag giveaway. Every month I'm giving away items from our guests and different things I have in the vault here for a swag bag. You can go to www.leftofstraight.com. That's www.leftofstraight.com. Go to the contest page, put your name in, and you will be entered into the Left of Straight swag bag. I'm happy to announce last month's winner, Mr. Jacob Shrimpman. Mr. Jason Shrimpman is going to get this month's swag bag. We had some CDs in there and a hat and some other fun things for it. So be sure to go to the leftofstraight.com website and enter your name in to win some cool swag each month. You can also go to the Patreon page. If you'd like to support the Left of Straight Show, you know I have no budget. I pay for all this myself. If you go to www.patreon.com, that's patreon.com/leftofstraight, spelled the same way we always do. You can subscribe to the Left of Straight Patreon page for as little as $10 a month, up to what you could give comfortably and win extra prizes throughout every month, which is kind of fun. So look into that as well. Let's see what we have happening in the news today. I want to give a big shout out and congratulations to Andy Cohen. He, of course, is the host of Watch What Happens Live and all the Housewives reunions, and was a big programmer for NBC back in the day and CBS, and a great producer of great LGBT content shows, and does a great job with Watch What Happens Live. He announced back in December that he was going to be having a baby soon. He has a surrogate, and last night was the happy night. Around 6:30-ish last night, he welcomed a baby boy, Benjamin Allen Cohen. The picture, if you're following him on Instagram, it is cute as heck. Healthy baby, healthy daddy. So congratulations, Andy Cohen, on a brand new bouncing baby boy. That's pretty awesome stuff. What else is happening in the news? The Jacked app gets jacked. If you guys are on these dating apps, we had the marketing director of Jacked on last year. I'm going to reach out to them. But I guess if you're on this Jacked app, that's JACK'D, they were hacked big time, and all of your pics and videos can be seen on there. It's a tricky way to get to it, but I guess it's able to do it, and they haven't addressed the problem yet. It's been over 3 months. And so I'm going to reach out to our contact there and see what's going on with that, see if I can have them on next week. But if you're on that app, please be careful, because all your pictures and videos, X and non-X, can be seen. I want to start out, and I was going to do this yesterday, and I totally forgot about it, so it's my fault, and I apologize. But, of course, every February is Black History Month. It's also LGBT History Month in the UK. So I'm going to start next week doing UK LGBT history icons, but I want to start this week doing LGBT icons from the Black community for Black History Month. And so there's two I want to go over today, and I'll be doing one every show for the rest of the month, and then starting next week, I'll also be doing a UK LGBT icon. But I wanted to give a big shout out first to two inspiring people of color queer icons. The first is Bayard Rustin. That's B-A-Y-A-R-D Rustin, R-U-S-T-I-N. He is a master strategist and tireless activist. He's best remembered as the organizer of the 1963 March on Washington, one of the largest nonviolent protests ever held in the United States. So in an era we have now of Black Lives Matters, it's really important that we know these modern-day freedom fighters, those who led the march before us. So a big shout-out to Black History Month and to a Black icon, Bayard Rustin. And also I want to give a shout-out to Audre Lorde. Audre is a Caribbean-American writer, radical feminist, a womanist, a lesbian, and a civil rights activist. One of her most notable efforts was her activist work with Afro-German women in the 80s, where she spoke on issues surrounding civil rights, feminism, and oppression. Her work gained wide acclaim and wide criticism due to the elements of social liberalism and sexuality presented in her work and her emphasis on revolution and change. Very much an AOC of her day, if you get my political drift there. So a big shout out to Audre Lorde and Bayard Rustin as we celebrate Black History Month this month. And these are two Black icons that I wanted to point out to you. And then next week we are going to add LGBT UK icons as well. So we have that going on. What else is happening? I want to remind everyone about the Big Gay Road Trip. Of course, we're going for our second annual Big Gay Road Trip. Last year in August was such a success. We spent the entire month of August in Dulge Resort in Palm Springs doing 8 live shows there every Monday and Tuesday. And this year we've invited back to go in June. So we're going to do Big Gay Road Trip Part 2, going from where I'm here in Ohio to Palm Springs, California. We're doing a month of shows in June this year. So we're going to have all brand new live guests. Very excited about that. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Be sure to tune in. We'll have more information being posted starting this month. I want to give a big shout out to my media partners, Pink Banana Media out of New York and LA, I Love Gay Palm Springs, and Tony Guadagnino in New York, who does my Twitter social media for me. Also, we have CBT Candle already on board as sponsors. We'll be looking for a lot more sponsors and partners as we go along. So plan on this June having a great time in Palm Springs with the Big Gay Road Trip Part Two, Part Deux, D-E-U-X, French, for Left to Straight Show. So I'm excited about that. So let's go ahead and get ready to get into it here. Like I said, my first guest today, I'm excited to have for the very first time, newly crowned Mr. Gay Canada, Josh Reimer. And then in our second hour, we'll be talking with the multinational, multicultural actress Katie Barbieri. Let's play a little bit of Blake MacGyver's This Is Who We Are. You're listening to the Left of Straight Show right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Pulling past the signpost of this tiny weathered town, the tears welled up so high inside, I thought that I might drown. Everything is different, but it all looks the same. And now you're here beside me, and I'm rid of all my shame. I just hope that they will see what has always been in me. How much do I love you? Will they understand everything it took for us to get those wedding bands? The road ain't always pretty, and home sometimes seems far, but twists and turns, the lessons are learned. But it's time for me to say, this is who we are. When I was a small boy, I never thought there'd be that perfect happy ending for anyone like me. I could read the signals, fake smiles and the blessed heart, still hear the whispered words that said I'd never be apart. Now I want them all to see the strength of you and me. How much do I love you?
Alrighty, we are back. That was Blake MacGyver with This Is Who We Are, featured in last year's A Very Sordid Wedding, Blake has always been a great friend to the show and has a new concert coming up in the Rockwell Table and Stage he's launching next month. It's going to feature all three versions of A Star Is Born, with a cast doing the different characters from each of the versions. It sounds like a pretty interesting concept. So we'll have him on next month to talk about that. Let's get right into our first guest today. I'm very excited to have him on. He recently received the title of Mr. Gay Canada and has already established himself as an LGBT influencer through his popular YouTube channel and appearing on Canada's LGBTQ television channel Out TV. He spent most of last year traveling to over 30 destinations with his fiance and sharing his adventures on his channel. And he's looking forward to sharing his journey as Mr. Gay Canada this year as he's ready to represent his country at the Mr. Gay World event held in South Africa. I'm so excited to have him on the show. Please welcome for the first time to the Left of Straight show, Mr. Josh Reimer. Josh, how you doing?
I am great. How are you?
I am fantastic. It's very nice to meet you. Thanks so much for coming on the show. How is everything in beautiful downtown Vancouver today?
It's great. It is sunny, which doesn't happen a lot this time of year in Vancouver, so we are just taking it all in.
There you go. Well, I'm glad to find you there. As we talked about, you did all this traveling last year. I do follow you on social media. I saw you were in New York last year. It's got to be nice to sleep in your own bed every once in a while, huh?
It is. Yeah, it's funny when you travel is such a passion of mine. I wanted to do more of it, and then it kind of went overboard. So now I do really appreciate being home.
There you go. I bet. Well, I'd like to start with a little bit of history about our new guest. Please tell me, where did you grow up? What kind of a kid were you? And what did you want to be when you grew up?
Well, I grew up in Red Deer, Alberta. So that Alberta is sort of like our Texas, I think, in lots of ways. It was like small city in the conservative area in the 90s. And I really wanted to be a purple cow. That's a true story. When I was asked what I wanted to be when I grew up, when I was 5, I said, I want to be a purple cow. And my ambitions have only changed slightly since then. I don't want to be purple anymore.
There you go. Where did a purple cow come from? Had you seen it somewhere? Or where did someone aspire to be a purple cow?
I am not sure. I think I've always been a little different. And purple was my favorite color. And I just thought, you know, cows have it made. They just hang out and eat. And it seemed like a good plan.
I like it. When did you first, my friend? And then when did you come out to others?
To myself, when I was about 20. And then it was a slow progression after that of coming out to others. First, I came out to like my really close friends. Then I came out to my parents, which I'm lucky to have quite open-minded parents. Like, my mom's an artist and she had a couple gay friends kind of, so I wasn't too worried about that. But then I went to Australia for the gay and lesbian Mardi Gras, and then that was really when I was like out to the world, because I was like, holy crap, look at all these gay people, they're everywhere.
Oh, I love that. That is so cool. Well, let's go into a little bit of history here. We're going to talk about YouTube in just one second. I can't believe you're in your 12th year on YouTube. It's only been around for about 14, but you were recording yourself back as early as 2004, even before it was invented. What drew you to the camera at such a young age?
Well, I've always been interested in it. I remember as a kid I would watch commercials on TV and be like, oh, I need to be in those commercials. And I was in theater productions and stuff, so I always sort of had the acting bug. And then when it became possible with the internet to just create my own stuff so I didn't have to constantly hope or try or just audition and not get something. It just seemed perfect to just create my own content. And then, of course, YouTube made it even easier to actually build an audience. So I just kind of jumped on all that stuff as soon as I found out about it.
That's awesome. And you've been named one of the top 10 channels in Vancouver back in 2015. And last year graduated to top six to watch by Western Canada's largest online publication, The Hive. Talk about starting the channel and how you went about building your platform.
Well, I started it, the YouTube channel, in 2007. And I had a video kind of go viral right off the bat. Like, basically, I uploaded my demo reel as sort of an actor or TV host. And then after that got like 10 views, I decided I need to do something else to get more attention. And so I created this thing called the $1,000 YouTube experiment. It was sort of this guerrilla marketing thing. It's still up if anybody wants to see it. And that went viral because basically I was giving away money to try to get the most discussed video of all time on YouTube. And in the summer of 2007, it worked. And I had the most comments on any video on YouTube. And it got me a whole bunch of media attention. And then it was just figuring out what to do from there. And lots of different attempts at all kinds of stuff. I think I'm about 900 videos in at this point and still playing around with it.
Wow. And that's kind of cool. You're able to kind of figure out those. I love guerrilla marketing in all forms. I used to have my own marketing business. I love people come up with those great ideas. And then talk about, you kind of did your own even production company. Talk about Stereotypical Gay and a couple other things you did. Those are probably kind of cool. You had something with your brother or something?
Yeah. So we first started with this show called Brothers TV. And we were actually buying airtime on a TV station in Alberta to air it late at night, like at 1 a.m, I think it was, sort of after the late night talk shows. You kind of buy infomercial time and then you can air your show. Because again, it was like, I don't want to just keep waiting for other people to say, okay, I just got to do my own thing and figure this out. So that was sort of the start of the production company. And then Out TV agreed to air it, and then I just created more things, mostly just for YouTube, because then I didn't actually have to buy airtime or deal with commercials and all that kind of stuff. So the Stereotypical Gay was just an idea that I had for my YouTube channel for a little web series where I would play a very stereotypical gay guy and get to say and do crazy things.
That is awesome. And you have great subscribership. You have over 33,000 subscribers. Talk about, I mean, YouTube has had a little controversy the last year or so with LGBT content. Have you come across any of that? And what's your kind of feelings on the platform? Are you been able to keep, you've been successfully growing yours. What do you think about LGBT content on YouTube and the problems they've had?
Well, I've been pretty lucky because it hasn't seemed to affect my channel very much. I think part of it is I'm quite brand friendly. Like my content's really quite clean and safe just because that's kind of the person I am. Like I don't really swear and I don't even really talk about sex or that kind of stuff. So I think I got overly lucky that way. But I know it's affected a lot of other people. And again, I think because it didn't affect me, it sort of made me realize like, yeah, I think they are actually just targeting people who are talking about sexual things, not necessarily targeting specifically LGBT people. But it's hard to say because it did obviously seem to disproportionately affect people in the LGBT community. So I don't know. I feel I was a bit lucky that it didn't affect me. And then also, I don't rely too much on YouTube's AdWords system for paying. You know, it doesn't really, you have to get a ton of views for that to really matter that much. And at the end of the day, it's just not a huge source of income. Like I'm on there to build an audience and a community and have a platform. though the money issues from YouTube haven't really been huge for me.
Very cool. And I want to talk about the travel part that you did last year in just a second. But I thought it was interesting. You did all this with your fiance last year, Heath, who's an adorable teddy bear of a guy. But talk about doing YouTube with your significant other, because it really hasn't worked out too well for some high-profile couples on YouTube. How do you guys use the platform to make it real but keep it fresh and private as well, have your own privacy as well?
Well, it's funny because Heath wasn't into YouTube at all or any social media really. But I mean, he still isn't really. He just sort of like coming along for the ride. So I think in a way that really helps, because it's not like it's the two of us and it's both of our passion and we both have a say and we have to go back and forth on things. It's really just my thing and he's just happy to come along. So that makes it kind of easy that there's not going to be really any arguments or debates or anything. He just wants to travel with me and I just like his company and keep it pretty easy. But now he has gone back to school, so most of this year I'm just going to be traveling on my own, unfortunately.
Oh, that's no fun. That's too bad.
Yeah, so I'll just see him when I'm at home.
Well, it's kind of cool. I'm very excited for you guys got engaged. Tell him, like I said, I think he's adorable. I can't believe you got engaged. As all the traveling you did, he waited to do it in your own hometown to get engaged. I thought that was kind of funny with all the traveling choices you could have chose. But he did it in your own pride. But talk about that. Was it exciting for you? Was it surprising? I mean, were you kind of expecting it down the line there? I mean, you had a video all about it, but talk a little bit of how you felt about it personally and what it means to you, how it brings your relationship to the next level.
He knew that I wanted to get engaged. I wasn't really keeping it a secret. And so the ball was sort of in his court, because we both knew that, like, I was ready, but he wanted to take things a bit slower. So I figured it was coming eventually, because we did talk openly about it and things seemed to be going that way, but I just didn't know when. So it was definitely a surprise just when it happened. Not like a huge surprise that it did happen. And he managed to do it in the Pride Parade, which was so cool. But, you know, typically when you propose to someone, you get down on one knee and you present a ring, and he didn't do either part. So, in fact, nobody around us knew what was going on. It just looked like he was talking to me, because pretty much that's what it was. He just said, will you marry me, as we were walking in the parade. So I like to bug him about that a lot. I probably will for the rest of my life. But, it's good. We're planning to get married in 2020, so we still have some time to figure it out. In the meantime, I get to call him my fiance instead of my boyfriend.
Nice. Well, you guys are a very cute couple. Congratulations.
Let's
talk about the traveling a bit. Like I said, you were at over 30 locations, I think. Tell me about all that traveling. Mm-hmm. Was it harder than you thought? Was it more fun than you thought? What was it? How was it looking back on it?
It was harder than I thought. Which, you know, it seems weird to be like, oh, it's so hard to travel, poor me. But it just was, you don't realize how much you appreciate home until you're away from it so often. Just everything, like my own bed, obviously I sleep a lot better in my own bed. And just having routine of the kind of food that I like to make and eat, or my workout routine, just all that kind of stuff really gets thrown off when you're traveling, and you just spend so much time in airports and airplanes and just getting around to different places. And then on top of it all, I'm sort of constantly working when I'm traveling. Like, I'm constantly taking photos and I'm taking video, and there was the editing and the blog and just all the other things that I had going on. So it never really felt like a like you're on vacation or something, even though I feel like I really make it look that way because it's just sort of a highlight reel that I'm putting out. But then there's just
right.
so much behind the scenes of like, all right, on to the next thing, on to the next thing, on to the next thing. And then we get into the airport on the way home and it's like, oh, we were just on vacation, I guess. So
yeah, that was
yeah,
one of my questions because like I said, you are filming it, so you can kind of look back on it when you're editing, I guess, but are you able to live in the moment when you're traveling to all these places or doing the sights in these places? Can you get in the moment, or is it really tough?
For the most part, that was a big struggle last year, was trying to be in the moment and trying to just appreciate the vacation or trying to build in time to be able to enjoy it a bit. Because I think we were about halfway through the year, and Heath and I said to each other, like, do you think we'll ever actually get to hang out in the hotel pool at any place that we go to? Because there was just literally no downtime. Like, you kind of get back to the hotel at 10 at night or whatever, and then it's like, okay, well, I've got to transfer the footage off of my phone. I'm shooting everything on my phone because, you know, heaven forbid I lose my phone tomorrow or something. Like, we got to get this all off here. And there was just always
right.
things to do. So in the end, yeah, I was sort of like, okay, I need to either build on an extra day of just downtime or try to do less while we're here. So that took a little while to kind of figure out.
Gotcha. And what would you say was your best experience and your worst experience of all your 30 places?
Oh, the best was, well, I mean, getting engaged was pretty cool. And I really liked going to Europe. Like, we got to go to Stockholm and to Barcelona, which was sort of like bucket list places for me to go to. So
nice.
Those were really neat. You know, of course, there's like a million awesome things to see in those places. But then also when we went to some random small places, you know, every city really does have unique or cool things to check out. So I can't even think of, I guess the worst maybe was when we went to places that were exceptionally cold. So like we
gotcha,
went to
yeah.
a few cities that were just unusually cold. Like we went to Houston, Texas, and it was colder there than it was in Canada, just this random cold snap. Or we went to Edmonton, Alberta, and it was the coldest April in 16 years. And just like miserably cold in a few places we went to.
Gotcha. Do you have a favorite type of place you like to visit? Like, I'm a beach guy. I like to have something near water. Do you have a favorite type? Do you like mountains, beaches, anything in particular that you're drawn to? Or just like to experiment with different things?
Yeah, I do tend to like to try different things. I think at heart, I am sort of a beach guy too. Like, I like nice weather. I like just sort of chilling and relaxing in the sun. But I do tend to do a lot of more kind of adventure type travel. I'm about to go to a city called Penticton in British Columbia to do winter activities like snowshoeing and fat biking and downhill skiing. So it's kind of all over the place.
Gotcha. How cool. What is the dream destination that you haven't been to that's still on your bucket list?
Well, I would like to go to New Zealand because I hear great things about it. And I've been to Australia, but not over to New Zealand.
Oh.
And I haven't really explored a lot of South America or Asia. I've been to lots of places in Europe and North America. So maybe some of those
gotcha.
Areas.
Very cool. And then I have friends that travel a lot, some of their music in it, but they perform music all over the world all the time. And they usually bring something to remind them of home or a particular creature comfort. Is there anything that you try to bring with you on your travels or something that you have to have to kind of keep your life normal? Like, if there was a place without coffee, I would die. I got to tell you this. I would die dead.
Well, I try to bring my fiance, but unfortunately I can't this year. So besides him, what do I normally bring? Really, it's like my laptop. Like I have to always be with my iPhone and my laptop, even if it's not because of work. It's just like those are I need to be connected to my technology. I'm like addicted to my technology. I don't know what I'd do without it. I could sit on the beach and I still have my laptop and my iPhone beside me.
Gotcha.
Which sounds like
very
a problem.
Cool. All right, well, let's take a little break. When we come back, I want to talk about into being an influencer and talk about Mr. Gay Canada. That sounds exciting as heck. Speaking of my friends in travel, let's play a little Brandon and James. I think they're down in Puerto Vallarta right now. This is my buddies Brandon and James with You Belong. You're listening to Left of Straight Show right here on Blog Talk Radio with our special guest, Mr. Josh Reimer. See you on the other side.
Back in fighting the law of attraction, never the one taking action. Years of denying this beauty inside, sleeping, scared of the fear they'd speak. And I never knew I was a beacon, waiting and waiting to light. When you're down and out, don't know what to do. What I found for me, I can be for you. If it comes from love, it'll never, ever be wrong. Never, ever be wrong. Never, ever be wrong. Never, ever be wrong.
Society. We are back. That is our buddy Brandon and James with You Belong. Powerful musicians, a power couple, and they are traveling all the time, too. Speaking of traveling, we have our guest today, Mr. Josh Reimer, who just spent a year of traveling and recording it for his YouTube channel. Now he'll be traveling even more as he has become Mr. Gay Canada 2019. We're going to talk about all that in just a second. Welcome back to the show, Josh. I want to talk a little bit about being an influencer. I'm sure that kind of helped create this all these travel plans, but we were talking a little off air. Being an influencer is not all fun and games, a little bit of hard work too. Tell me how that all came about and what it's like to be an actual influencer through YouTube or through Instagram or things like that. How's it been to you?
Yeah, it's been interesting. just even the term influencer, I always feel a bit weird. It's like, who are you to say if you're influential or not? But that is like what they refer to people who have a following online as, I guess.
Right.
But yeah, it's, you know, it started out as just a hobby. I mean, when I started on YouTube, there wasn't really, nobody was making money from it. There wasn't really even a concept of like, this is to make money. And my idea was just that Hollywood was going to discover me through YouTube. So I needed to be on there. And then eventually I got to join the partner program so you could make some money from that. And then there started to be companies that were interested in partnering, and it all just grew from there. But it does become this whole other thing when you try to take it from being a hobby to being a career. There's all new pressures put on it, and it's just a whole other beast. And the same with the travel. It's like I would just travel occasionally for fun, and then I was like, okay, I'm going to be a travel vlogger. Well, now I have to make sure that I can monetize this and that I have a certain amount of content and regular content, and just huge pressure added to it, and it really changed the whole dynamic. So the whole influencer space is very interesting and weird and fun and a little wacky.
Gotcha. Now, obviously, some of the perks, you get some swag on occasion and things like that. What's some of the perks that you enjoy for? I mean, is the travel the fun thing, going to premieres or stuff like that? How do you try to use your influence status both for personal fun and to kind of make a difference?
There's definitely perks. Yeah, the travel is a perk for sure. I mean, it's still pretty amazing to get to see all these places. And yeah, if you get invited to some events or you get to try some new products or any of that kind of stuff, that's definitely very cool. And what was the other part of your question?
Are you able to use it to do any of your own personal agendas? I mean, anything? Are you able to kind of combine that?
Yeah, so definitely. I do a lot of volunteering here for some local organizations, mostly that deal with HIV/AIDS related issues or LGBT refugees. And so it's great because they're causes that I care about. When I'm out volunteering, I can get a picture to share on my social media or make a YouTube video about it, or, you know, incorporate it in whatever way. And actually have some people that can take notice of it. It's sort of one thing when you're just trying to tell people like, hey, this is something that I think is really important. But if you don't have an audience, you just don't really necessarily feel like you've got the effect and the reach. So being a quote unquote influencer is great when you can get behind these organizations that you really believe in and try to push them out to the masses.
That's awesome. I love that. And what is there any inherent dangers in it? I mean, I feel like, can you make a misstep since you're so public and everything? Are people looking, everyone's trying to pull someone down. Have you come across anything that's kind of on the not so good side of being an influencer?
Yeah. Well, I mentioned to Heath, my fiance, like just before we announced that I was Mr. Gay Canada, I'm like, you know, this year. Somebody's going to call me out on something. I'm going to say something wrong, and the internet is going to come after me, because you're right. Like, people just love to raise someone up and they love to tear someone down. And
right.
We have a lot of very sensitive people on the internet these days. So, you know, it is a bit of a concern. What am I going to say wrong at some point that or it's going to be taken out of context or who knows what. But at the end of the day, I feel like if you're kind of just, you know, speaking your truth and you're just being your authentic self, you probably are okay if your authentic self isn't a total jerk. So I don't feel like I'm overly cautious or anything, but I am aware if people are paying attention, if somebody's going to find something they don't like and make a big deal out of it, I'm ready for it.
There you go. Got big shoulders. You can take it, man. You can take it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, being on YouTube this long, you have to have a thick skin.
Yeah, there you go. Thick skin definitely helps. Talk about, mm-hmm. Let's say someone is starting to get a little popular, or they're going to try doing some things to make themselves a little popular. What does it take to be an influencer? Where should you be looking? What do you recommend to someone who wants to be an influencer? What should they be doing to kind of put them on the leg up?
Well, I think it's really helpful if you can narrow down a bit at the beginning, at least, sort of kind of know what your niche is. Like, are you sharing all about travel? Are you all about the LGBT community? Are you all about, you know, this, that, you love cooking, whatever. Like, if you can sort of focus in on something in particular, it can really help with growing a following, because people will see your post about something and then follow or subscribe or like whatever platform they're on, because they want to see more of that sort of thing. So if you can give them more of that same thing, it can really help you to grow. And then once you're bigger, then it's a bit easier to diversify a bit, because people now at this point are kind of following you more for you. But at the beginning, I think it's kind of important to get a bit niche on what you're doing. And then also just to not focus on monetizing it at the beginning, because, you know, you really are trying to just provide value to people, whether you're entertaining them or you're teaching them or a sense of community or whatever it is. And so a lot of people tend to want to jump in kind of right off the bat with, okay, I got my first like 1,000 followers. I want to get a brand deal. But that really has to come later. It's like you got to kind of build the audience first. Even platforms like Facebook didn't have ads at the beginning. They just wanted to get everyone on there, have the sort of optimal experience, and then bring in the advertisers. So at the beginning, I feel like there's a lot of people now who are like, I want to be an influencer because I want to get all this cool stuff, or I want to – I hear they make a ton of money or whatever it is. But it's like, oh, you kind of need – you need to be doing something that you would really enjoy doing, even if you weren't making any money at it, because it's going to be the best way to grow.
Advice. I love that. Let's move on a little bit. Let's talk about, I mean, you've done a lot of hosting, you've emceed events and television events. How is that for you? I mean, I'm sure being on video has helped because you can edit yourself and everything, but this is live. Talk about the difference between emceeing and hosting and doing your edited type videos, and what do you love about the hosting part?
Yeah, well, the hosting, I mean, so I do have kind of a theater background as well, so that sort of plays into the hosting, and I've been part of a queer improv troupe here in Vancouver for, I think, about 6 years. So
nice.
Kind of get to put my improv skills to the test, really, when I'm hosting or emceeing. It is it's a lot more nerve-wracking, and I feel it's more kind of difficult to do stuff live, because when you're doing it in front of a camera and it's not live, you can just retake it, right? You just reshoot when something screws up, and then you edit it so that you're fully in control of what's going out to the world. But if I'm on stage,
right,
I'm in front of 100 people, and I screw up, well, too bad, you screwed up. I'm like, move on.
So, and you hope
so
they don't have cameras.
It's exhilarating. Yeah, exactly.
<There you go. laughs> too funny. Let's get into Mr. Gay Canada. Congratulations. You thoroughly seem surprised by it. Is it something that's bestowed on you? It's not anything you run for? Or how did that all come about?
Yeah, so the way they do it in each country really is a bit different depending on who's running it in that country. But in Canada, for the last 3 or 4 years, they've just been designating someone from the community to be Mr. Gay Canada. And so I got to be the one this year. And it's really exciting and such an honor. And then I go to the Mr. Gay World competition where there's going to be guys that are half my age with twice the muscle. And I'm going to hope that my personality shines.
That's kind of cool. Have you ever been to South Africa before in your travels?
I haven't. So that's going to be amazing. I've heard awesome things about it.
That's going to be exciting. Now, since you're bestowed, you don't really know what you're getting into ahead of time. Since they just say, hey, guess what? You're Mr. Gay Canada. What is expected of you and what is your quote-unquote duties for this year besides going on to the Mr. Gay World competition?
Well, really, I'm just supposed to be a good active member of the community, be doing some volunteering and activism and being someone who can represent us well at the Mr. Gay World competition. So there's not really any specific requirements or expectations beyond that. So it's kind of up to me to do with it as I want. And I was looking for a bit of a new direction with my content because Heath, my fiance, is going back to school, or just went back to school. So it kind of, the timing was perfect to be like, oh, well, now I'll just bring people along with me on this year of being Mr. Gay Canada and just turn it
there
into my
go.
Content.
That's a great poinky deaky. I like that. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations on it. I mean, just to be picked, that shows a lot of respect for you, and I think that's awesome. What other goals do you have for yourself personally? Anything you see yourself doing in the next year, next 5 years? What's your own personal goals for yourself?
Well, I think right now the content that I do on TV it's called interstitial programming. So they're 3-minute segments and they air between regular shows every day, sort of filler content, like when the TV station doesn't have all the ads sold. So I think I would like to move on to a regular length show, maybe on another network beyond just OutTV. So sort of keep growing that, which is really the ongoing goal of building my career. And
nice.
I would like to do more. I really want to put a focus on LGBT refugees this year and try to do more fundraising around that and kind of bring the community together to get more people over here who really need a new start at life and get them the supports that they need once they're here.
That's fantastic. Good for you. Now, everyone that I talk to in the entertainment industry always wants to get to LA or New York. You've done so well for yourself in Canada. Do you ever see yourself leaving Canada, or is that your place to be, or do you ever see yourself somewhere else?
Well, yeah, I guess back in the day, you know, I thought, well, yeah, I need Hollywood to come calling and then I can go over there. But I can't really see myself leaving Canada. I mean, especially now if I'm like Mr. Gay Canada, it'd be weird for him to have left Canada.
Up and up for a year, right? Right.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. But so I think I'd love to I love Canada. I love being here. So it'd be very hard to leave. I mean, maybe for some nice California weather or something, but I think there's a lot of opportunities in Canada, in like Vancouver and Toronto and the major centers for my kind of career. So for now, I think I should be good up here.
Awesome. Well, I got to say, Vancouver, if I have to go to Canada, that's the place I want to go because all my superhero movies are filmed there. I would be stalking Colton Haynes, Stephen Amell, and all of my CW characters on a daily basis. I wouldn't have time doing
that.
Yeah.
They do shoot a lot of cool stuff up here.
They really do. Well, Mr. Josh Reimer, I want to thank you so much for coming for the first time on the Left and Straight Show. We have to have you back real soon as we find out, follow all your adventures. Let everyone know where they can find you on YouTube and the social media and how they can follow these adventures of Mr. Gay Canada 2019.
Sure. So my username pretty much everywhere is Josh Reimer, and that's R-I-M-E-R. And my website is joshreimer.com, which links to everything too. And yeah, I'll be sharing all my adventures on my YouTube channel and Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and my blog and Out TV and everywhere possible.
Awesome blossom. My friend, it's great to meet you. I hope to have you on again soon. Thanks for coming on the Left of Straight Show. You're awesome.
Thank you so much. This was awesome. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Stay on the line for me. Guys, we're going to go to break. Coming on in just a couple seconds, I have my interview with Katie Barberi. Just to pull the curtain back a bit, Katie is in the middle of rehearsing her play that she is performing in Chicago. So we had to do a pre-tape interview Friday night. So this is a pre-tape interview with Katie Barberi and her partner in crime and fiancé, Craig Hurley, was going to be on immediately after, but Craig and I ended up talking for hours, so I'm going to bring him back another day. So it does say that Craig's on right afterwards. He'll be back next week. So thanks so much to Josh. Listen to a little bit of our good friend David Hernandez from American Idol singing Beautiful. And when we come back, we'll have my pre-tape interview with the lovely Miss Katie Barberi. You're listening to Left of Straight Show right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Father in the sky, and they start into a line. I see you passing by, and we're slowing down the tide. Now my love is flashing by, all I see is flashing lights. Cause you're right here by my side, can you feel it come alive? If this were a love song, would you be mine? Cause I just can't get you off of my mind. And I think about you all day and night. So I wrote you a love song, won't you?
You
And we are back. Guys, that was David Hernandez from American Idol with Beautiful. He'll be back on the show in early March when Idol kicks off its next season and talk about his new work. And speaking of Beautiful, I'm so happy to welcome back a very good friend of the show. She's as beautiful on the inside as she is on the outside, has gained fame and recognition using her multinational and bilingual heritage to work on some amazing projects both here and abroad. She's currently in Chicago getting ready for the world premiere of Stephanie Allison Walker's play, The Abuelas, at Teatro Vista Theater, February 9th through 17th. The play is a companion piece to The Madres, which had its own world premiere at the same theater just last April. Please welcome back to the show the beautiful and talented Miss Katie Barbieri. Katie, how you doing?
I'm so good. That was such a lovely introduction. How are you? ¿Cómo estamos?
Bien. Thank you so much for coming on, and don't make me do Spanish anymore. I'm in big trouble.
Okay. Ya no te torturo con eso, which means I won't torture you with that anymore.
There you go. Well, push it in there when you need it, because I do have some Spanish-speaking people there that know both. But I'm excited to have you calling in from Chicago. I never know where I'm going to find you, down in Florida, L.A., Latin America. You are definitely an actress, my dear. You are all over the place. How have you been?
I'm pretty mobile. They say that this career is very gypsy, and one has to definitely keep that in mind. On all levels in this business, I have worked in L.A., Mexico, Colombia, Miami, now here, you know, and New York, and you just have to be Venezuela, Argentina, all over the place, and you just have to be, it has to be about your love for the project, and do you want to be a part of the project, and the project is happening somewhere, and wherever that somewhere is, that's where you find yourself being a part of it. So I've been very lucky in that respect. I just wanted to let you know, we are up from February 9th to March 17th. So that's, through March 17th, we're going to do 23 shows. Is what I last counted is what we've got, which is it's exciting. It's very, very, it's an extraordinary play, and I'm very honored to be a part of it.
That's exciting. And if I know you, as good as your cast is going to be, they're going to want to extend it. I hope the theater can do that, but good for you.
Wow.
That's fantastic.
I don't know. Yeah, it's Teatro Vista is the theater company producing it. They're an extraordinary equity theater company for Hispanic and Latino talent. I believe the only one, sustainable one in this part of the country, in the Midwest. And we are, our shows are going to be at Victory Gardens Theater, the Biograph, because, you know, Teatro Vista is actually exhibiting the show and running the show at Victory Gardens Theater, which is very exciting because Craig Hurley, my fiance, he did a play at Victory Gardens when he was 14, I believe. So I've heard about Victory Gardens an awful lot through these years, and for me it's an honor to finally step on their amazing stage. It's going to be at the Richard Christensen Theater at Victory Gardens. So it's exciting. I am excited. The rehearsals are very, very intense. It's a very intense, extraordinary story that I can't believe. I lived and worked in Mexico for 9 years. All grown up as an adult. Moved there when I was 21. I had been an actress in LA for 10 years, working basically the Anglo market, although I did do some things in Spanish, and went to Mexico and accepted a contract with them at Televisa, which is the biggest distributor of telenovelas in the world. And I worked and lived and shot in Mexico for 10 years, 9 or 10 years in there, and worked with a lot of Argentinian actors. And I am blown away that I never knew about this story. This story was brought to my attention through Stephanie Allison Walker's amazing work with this play and with its predecessor, The Madre. It talks about the dirty war in Argentina that happened in the 70s and 80s. Apparently, after Mr. Perón, after Eva Perón died, he married another woman. She became vice president and then president when he passed on, and there was some sort of rebellion. I don't want to get too political with it, because I'm sure that there are different points of view about what happened. So I want to try to stay as general as I
right.
can. But basically, there was a cleansing, if you will, in this country, where they were seeking to exterminate in different ways who they considered to be rebellious members of society, which ended up being wonder of wonders, artists and singers, folk singers, rebellion singers, and actors, musicians, a series of people who they felt were creating a negative influence on society. This really happened. And so they would capture these people and bring them to Vyazma, and I believe other locations, but specifically where this place takes place, a play takes place in Vyazma, in the middle of Buenos Aires. And they were detained there and apparently tortured, which is just horrible information. It's a horrible thing to find out at this point in my life,
right.
knowing as many Argentinians as I know and loving them so much, loving the country so much, this horrible thing that the citizens went through, losing their children and ultimately losing their grandchildren in many cases, because any women that were pregnant, that were captured, their pregnancy was taken to term, and then the babies were given to what the government or the military felt were good Catholic citizens, positive citizens for the country to raise. And a lot of these women were killed and thrown off an airplane into the Atlantic Ocean. I mean, it just sounds absolutely horrific. The play, on the contrary, the play is a very human look at this phenomenon that occurred in Argentina in the 70s and 80s. And the first play, The Madres, which has already exhibited in L.A., Chicago, Texas, San Diego, and Mexico. The Madres is having a lot of success. It was also written by Stephanie Allison Walker. Takes place specifically during
that time.
I love
the backstory. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I love
That's
the
okay.
backstory of it. I mean, I read a little bit about it. I mean, it's all about the strength and resilience of the women there, and we think about
yeah.
everything happening in this country now with our Women's
right.
March, and these women refused to be silenced for speaking truth to power and the stories of the missing children. And
that's
they showed
right.
up marching like every Thursday, and wow, I mean, that's some amazing stuff.
Yeah, and the Abuelas, the play that I am now fortunate and privileged and honored to be a part of, takes place 37 years later when these children are grown, the grandchildren, if you will, are grown of the people that were captured, of the women specifically that were captured. And the Abuelas is a real organization in Argentina seeking to find these grandchildren, the children that were born in the Vyazma and given to other families to
wow.
be raised. And so it's there's a lot of intensity in the play. It's a very human look at what happens to one character specifically, and her family and everyone involved in the situation. I don't want to give too much away, but Stephanie manages within the story to establish a tremendous amount of humor and humanity and heart and love. And for me, it's really hard to get through any rehearsal without just bursting into tears, because it's so beautiful the resilience. It's so beautiful to see the resilience of these women and the men that are trying to assist them through this just extraordinary life change that they're experiencing. And this play takes place in Chicago mostly, and it's the story of Gabriela, who is my daughter in the play, who is a grown woman, played extraordinarily by Cruz González-Cadell, who I can't wait for people to see her performance. It's mind-blowing how talented she is. And what happens when you find out that your life may have been a lie, and how you deal with that. And it's just a real honor to be a part of it. I work with Alba Guerra, who is an extraordinary Argentinian actress and tango singer, Nate Santana, who's an amazing young actor, American, Puerto Rican. He's got a really, really good role apparently on Chicago Med, so that's very exciting for him. Eddie Martinez, who is a wonderful Latino actor. Ilse Zacarias, who's just a gorgeous young Latina actress who is also part of the cast. It's an honor. It really is.
Nice. Well, it sounds like an amazing cast, and I can't believe you're playing a mother. I mean, you celebrated your birthday there, and I saw some pictures since I do stalk you on social media. I want to see the portrait you have hidden in an attic somewhere, because you don't age a bit, my dear.
I'll tell you. I mean, the character – no, thank you so much. The character is solidly as written, 2 decades older than I am. So for me, it was the director, producer, Ricardo Gutierrez, talked to me and said, you are too young for this role. But we want you anyway. And so I was honored and thrilled. You know, an actor, Angela Lansbury, was playing mothers at the age of 21 and 22. She was playing women a good 20 and 30 years older than she was. And many actors take on roles where they begin, their character begins young, and we see the character growing up until their very elderly years. And for me, it's a pleasure to explore a character that is older and perhaps wiser in some ways than I am, but it's certainly more experienced. But Soledad has a tremendous weight on her shoulders at all times, but she looks at life through, let's put it this way, rose-colored glasses. And she's actually a very funny character. She's a delightful character. She's a big little girl, if you will. And so I've pulled my inspiration from several people I know and several characters that I've had the pleasure of creating in past projects, and also just exploring the heart of this woman, you know, and what she experiences throughout the play. It's extraordinary what Stephanie was able to write for what I would imagine approximately, we haven't seen it, you know, exactly timed it, but it's approximately a 2-hour play with an intermission. It's extraordinary the journey that all of these characters go through in that amount of time. And anyone that's seen it or been a part of it so far is just on the edge of their seats from beginning to end and just love it. You laugh and you cry and you learn so much about, you know, it's very relatable, the story, to what we're dealing with now as Americans in this country. And it's about the human spirit, women's resilience, the human condition, no prejudice, no hate, stopping torture, stopping imprisonment with no justification on any level, and government control in certain parts of the world that is just, you know, ruining lives. And allowing people to live and be who they are, and the freedom to experience life on this planet in its plain and simple respect of, this is who I am and this is what I bring to the table as a human being, and I don't have any reason to lie about that, you know?
That is beautiful. I absolutely love that. And we've mentioned Stephanie a couple times, the playwright. I need to know, have you met her? I'm a little bit fascinated by her. She's an American with an Argentinian grandmother who wrote
she
this.
Is.
She even lived in London as a kid and had a British accent. I mean, what is she like in person? She sounds amazing.
Oh, my God. She just lights up a room is what she does. She is actually an extremely busy lady living in Los Angeles. Flew here for the rehearsals. We miss her terribly. Her heart and her light and her point of view about these characters, the stories, what she brings to us as actors, and her ability to allow us to be a part of the process with her, the way that she deals with us in regard to teamwork. She just is an extraordinarily generous human being, and I'm very proud to be a part of any production that she does. She wrote a book, which I am looking forward to reading, Love in the Time of Foreclosure. I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but I've been doing my research on her as well. And she's written these plays, the Abuelas, which is what I'm thrilled to be a part of. The Madres, I believe she's got another play going up in Los Angeles called Friends with Guns. I believe that's right. I hope I'm right. I don't have the information in front of me. But she's quite amazing. And she also has a stepmother who is Argentinian, I believe. The woman that is married to her father now is Argentinian.
Okay.
So she went to Argentina and she investigated all of this thoroughly. And the characters that are in this play are an amalgam, if you will, of a lot of the information that she was able to gather. She was very moved by the human condition of this experience. And also, you know, how many people aren't aware of it? It really is. It's something that is being brought to the forefront, a phenomenon in South American history that's being bought by these plays in a way that we haven't seen before. So she should be extremely proud of that, you know, because she's bringing awareness to something that shouldn't have happened, you know, and people are still at this point, you know, these grandchildren, they're still finding out, you know, that they might be children of the disappeared. And it's an ongoing
right.
situation today, 2019, it's ongoing. So.
Wow. That is crazy.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
It sounds like an amazing piece of work. I'm so excited for you. Talk about doing theater in Chicago. I mean, you were back there last year, I believe, doing another play, Felons and Familiars, the Goodman Theater. How was that experience, and what is the theater scene like in Chicago?
I got to tell you, it was a lifetime dream to be on the stage at the Goodman. It really was. You know, when you look at the actors that have stepped on these stages and the inspirations that they are, you know, it's an extraordinary feeling even to just be in that club now. I came to Chicago to do theater because it's a wonderful opportunity to hone your craft, but also I've found that some of the best actors in the world come out of Chicago theater. I mean, the list goes on and on of extraordinary actors
right.
from Laurie Metcalf to Malkovich to on and on and on and on. And it's a pleasure and an honor. I've apparently, according to my coworkers, done pretty well in the short amount of time that I've been here. Felons and Familias was written by the extraordinary Sandra Delgado, who wrote La Habana Madrid, who is I think the most successful Latino play in Chicago's history, was written by Sandra Delgado. Felons and Familias is about
wow.
the struggle that a lot of Latinos, immigrants in general, but specifically in this story that is told in Felons and Familias, which, by the way, I believe the title has now changed, because this production that we did at the Goodman was called New Works and New Stages. And so with New Stages, it's a process that the writers are in with the actors and with the director and with the audience. And things can change. A lot of the dialogue can change. Whole scenes can be reworked or eliminated or added. And so it was a process every day of maybe getting new pages, new direction. And one of the things that happened was the title of Felons and Familias changed to Hundreds and Hundreds of Stars, because it was just, it's a beautiful
okay.
story about how, well, my take on it, and I said this to Sandra, is that at the end of the day, as human beings, if there's one thing we have in common, no matter what part of the world that we're in, it's that you look up and you're looking up at the same sky. You're looking up at a sky with stars, hopefully a sun, and at night, hopefully stars, although I know there are different parts of the world where they don't experience that. But in general, it's the human phenomenon is that we're all looking up at a sky filled with stars, and that's the thing that we have in common. And Hundreds and Hundreds of Stars, formerly known as Felons and Familias, is about the immigrant struggle in the United States, and it's just a heartbreaking story about a young woman who finds out that she is eligible for deportation. She has a daughter, she has an ex-husband, she's lived her entire life as of 2 years of age. She's an American, she feels like an American, she walks and talks like an American. That's her world, she is a Chicagoan, and she's very proud to be that. And she finds out at 30-something that she is eligible for deportation, and I play the lawyer who or played the lawyer who had some very unfortunate news for her in this play. So we had people hunkering down, just sobbing at the end of the play. Everyone that saw it loved it. And for me, it was extraordinary to be a part of it. Chicago actors, directors, writers, some of the most committed artists I've seen in the world, truly. You need to be on your game because you're dealing with people that truly love the art and the profession of being a performer. There's not a lot of money in it. There's not a lot of fame in it unless you are headlining or you're a part of a project where there are headlining actors that they've brought in from perhaps L.A. or New York.
Right.
These are local theater actors who are completely committed to their craft. And coming from the telenovela genre, which is, you know, and Nickelodeon, and which is there's a lot of recognition worldwide and a lot of fame and a series of things to get back to the basics of performing, to get back to the basics of falling in love with a character and justifying. I seek to do that with every role that I do. Truly, I fall in love with every project that I'm a part of, and it's I consider it a tremendous responsibility as an actor to give whoever I am fortunate enough to have seen my work the opportunity to escape whatever it is that they're experiencing in that moment and experience whatever my character is experiencing. I have always felt that way, but to have it be so basically about that with these fellow actors and seeking the best possible version of a performance that you give before an audience and honoring the audience with that performance, giving of themselves in the way that they do to be a part of that has been, needless to say, an extraordinary experience. And I have loved every minute of it.
I am so excited for you.
Thank you.
It's definitely needed to have these serious plays, especially in this time we have so much going on with immigration in other countries, in our country. I mean, you really need stories like this. And unfortunately, it's going to breed so many more just like them. The times we're living in now, but your acting ability is going to raise these levels. But I also want to talk about your comedy. I always tell my friends, because of your timing and just your delivery, you always remind me of Deborah Messing of Will and Grace. You are so funny. I saw the preview of the Blexicans, and my dear, you are absolutely magic. How fun was that pilot to film? And please tell me someone's going to pick it up one of these days.
Oh, well, you know, I'd love to hear that they are. First of all, I have to tell you, the comparison to Deborah Messing, hello, an honor. I remember shooting several scenes on Every Which Way and turning to the director, to Clayton Bowen, after we shot it and saying, Deborah Messing was there? Carol Burnett was there? Suzanne Summers was there? Tell me, Lisa Kudrow was there? Tell me these people were in the room with me while I shot this scene. And she is one of those people.
You have every bit of her timing and talent, my dear. You remind me exactly of her.
Oh, well, thank you so, so much. A Latina Deborah Messing, I'll take it. My mom
there
was thrilled to hear that to hear that comparison as well. She has always said that to me, and that for me has always been quite an inspiration. The character that I'm playing, and I know it sounds crazy, but the character that I'm playing in the Abuelas, I have to say, it's an honor for me. I really am. This character is, if there is comedic relief, comic relief in this production. I'd say that my character humbly is providing it, and I certainly hope that I can see that through. And I certainly hope that we get some laughs because she's a profound woman in many ways and a bit of a bubblehead in others, decidedly. I feel that she kind of made that decision in her life, and so we see that. I need you to ask me the question one more time, specifically what the question was.
That was basically it. Just I loved just a comment about how much I love you, but I did like Blexicans and see if there was any movement
Blexicans.
In that at all because it was hilarious.
Oh, well, thank you so much. The Blexicans, that's the part I forgot. So you mentioned Deborah Messing and everything went out the door. the Blexicans. The Blexicans was actually the project that brought me to Chicago and that made me fall in love with the idea of working here to begin with. I shot that, I believe, in 2016. And Rick Najera, who is a dear friend of mine, who is the reason that I actually got my equity card because he cast me as his wife in Sweet 15 Quinceañera, which I did at the San Diego Rep with him in 2006.
Okay.
And so I was actually shooting the third season of Every Which Way in Miami. And he contacted me and said, by any chance, are you available to do this pilot? I'd like to cast you in the role of my wife. And I said, send me the script. Ironically, they were shooting like 3 weeks on Every Which Way in the Everglades. They had to get all of those scenes done, and I wasn't in any of them. It was all just the kids. So I happened to be able to play hooky, and they flew myself and my fiance Craig Curley to Chicago. He is a Chicago native. He was born in Illinois, raised here, a graduate of the Chicago Academy for the Performing Arts, and considers himself to be a Chicago actor, a Chicago-trained actor. So he was very excited for me. And the thing is that because I was shooting and because I was in the middle of this project and because of the time crunch and we made the deal and we got on the plane, I read the script. I didn't really know what I was getting into. And when I walked in, we literally got off the plane and they drove us to wardrobe immediately to get me fitted for wardrobe because I was going to be shooting the next day. And all of a sudden, in walks Michael Collier. And all of a sudden, in walks Richard Gant. And all of a sudden, in walks Marla Gibbs. And that is when I realized, and Vanessa Vasquez, and that is when I realized the extraordinary African-American and Latino cast that I was going to be working with. And I was, my knees just dropped out from beneath me. And I said, oh, my God. I turned to Craig and I said, holy, because this was a lead role. I said, holy crap, I better bring it. And then the next day we had a table read, and thank God everybody laughed at my lines. And I thought, oof, phew, okay, I think I'm going to be all right. But this was done by Red Dove Productions, and it was an extraordinary project to be a part of. And I don't know what's happening with it, but I think it's a very timely, heartfelt, funny way to look at race relations now,
right.
In 2019. I think it's very relevant, and I'd love to see it get it picked up. You can go on YouTube and check out the promos for it. Just put in promo the Blexicans, and you'll see it. The information is there and available. It's a great project, and I certainly hope that they. I'm here. So if they want to pick it up, I'm already in Chicago. They don't even have to fly me in. So
there you go.
Yeah.
Well, you talk about you've worked with your partner in crime and in life, Craig Hurley, is going to be coming on in just a little bit here. We're going to get to talk to him in a second. You've worked on graphic novels with him. You're doing plays now. You've done television. You've done movies. What draws you to particular projects, and what are you hoping to do next? What's on store?
You know, there are different projects. It's so funny because I was a female lead on the Garbage Pail Kids movie when I was 15. I played Tangerine, and a lot of people are shocked that I was 15. But you can go on, and we can't keep our birthday to ourselves anymore. That doesn't happen because all you have to do is go on the internet and you can see it. So if you do the math, you'll see I am telling the truth. I was 15 when I shot the Garbage Pail Kids movie, and at that time, I was very excited about working with Anthony Newley, the late, great Anthony Newley, and Mackenzie Ashton, who I'm still in touch with, and a slew of other projects that I've been a part of, but I talk about this one specifically for this reason. At the time, we got throttled, panned, destroyed, if you will, considered by some critics to be the worst movie of 1987, and others to be just one of the top 10 worst movies of 1987. Well, now... It has a huge cult following, and it's one of the projects that I still get the most residuals for. And it's something that now, you know, people of my generation and younger generations and what have you, they really love the movie for what it was and what they were trying to do. And what I mean by that is I don't know exactly what it is that draws me to any particular project. It may be the actors I'll be working with. It may be where the project is being shot. It may be the story, or it may be just instinct that tells me this might not, you know, appeal to everyone, but to me, I'm going to go for it because I see something here that maybe others don't see at this moment. And I've never been wrong, not even in that case. I feel that in this life, if a door opens, walk through it. And always listen to your gut. Always listen to your heart. Always listen to your instincts. They will never fail you. They will never fail you. The only time that they fail you is if you don't listen hard enough. So any project that I take, it's because I'm committed to taking on that project and bringing the best of myself, my work ethic, my professionalism, and my histrionic abilities, whatever they may or may not be. My language abilities, you know, I'm bilingual. I have all of that, bicultural. Bring all of that, bring all of my life experience to the table and commit to it no matter what project it is, be it, television, film, stage, telenovela, comedy, Nickelodeon, half hour, 1 hour drama, whatever it may be. If I've taken it, I'm going to see it through, and I'm going to see it through with joy. And I've never been wrong. Every time that I've taken it, it's brought something unique and wonderful to my life. So no regrets. Ever.
I love that. Well, you are not allowed to wait so long to come back on the show. I'm so excited for you. Give everyone again the theater and the dates of The Abuelas, co-starring my favorite guest here, Miss Katie Barbieri. Give everyone the stats there. And where can they follow you on social media?
Oh, you can absolutely, if you'd be so kind as to follow me on Twitter, at Katie Barbieri, Instagram, at The Real Katie Barbieri, and on Facebook, I have my fan page, Katie Barbieri, Actress, Actrice. So I'm easy to find as long as you can spell my name.
There you go. And remind everyone the dates and the theater.
Yes, absolutely. So The Abuelas premiering, we're actually in previews, but the previews are, audience, and you can pay to see that. I believe there are discount tickets on the 9th, the 10th, the 13th, and the 14th. And then I believe we open officially on the 15th, but I don't have the dates in front of me, so don't quote me on that. We are absolutely opening for business on the 9th of February, and at this point to the 17th of March at Victory Gardens Theater, Richard Christensen Theater in Victory Gardens, Biograph for Teatro Vista, written by Stephanie Allison Walker. And we're so excited to have as many people as we can fit in the room see this project. It really is. It's worth seeing. And I'm not just saying that because they were kind enough to choose me. It truly is worth seeing.
Well, break a leg. I am so excited for you. If the polar vortex lifts, I may drive the little six-hour drive to get there because I definitely want to see the river turn green on St. Patrick's Day. You're only a day away from that. So I'm liking that on closing time. I'll have to come join you. We'll have to have a beer.
Oh, my God. No, and there are the greatest little restaurants right around that area. That's another thing that it's worth telling everybody. Come out and spend, like, the afternoon, evening there. It's just – it's a lovely part of town. It's so cute. It looks like a little storybook village, and it's just lovely to be around Victory Gardens Theater and these wonderful artistic people in Chicago who bring so much to the city, truly. So, yes, you have to come. We would love it if you would be there. It would be awesome to have you in that audience.
I am going to cry hard.
An honor.
Miss Katie Barbieri, thanks so much for coming back to the Left of Straight show. Stay on the line so we can do a little phone handoff to your man there, Mr. Craig Hurley. Guys, we're going to play out. With a little bit of music from Damian Escobar, this is Freedom. You're listening to the Left of Straight show right here on Blog Talk Radio. Alrighty, we are back. Thanks to Katie Barberi for a wonderful interview. Also, a big shout out to Josh Reimer for calling in from all the way up in Canada. Guys, thanks so much for listening to the show today. As I said, we're going to the Craig Hurley that we talked about in this last interview is going to be on next week. Next week, we have a couple of great shows for you. On Monday, the 11th, we have the Shirtless Violinist coming on, Matthew Olson. And then we're going to have our good buddies Ben and Thandi, Thandi Tolme and Ben Bauer from the web series Adulting will be here on Monday. And on Tuesday, February 12th, I have artist and comic jar Greg Fox, as well as Craig Hurley, will be talking about his graphic novel, Daylight Sucks, a vampire one, and about his career in motion pictures. So it's going to be a great show next week. I hope you'll tune in later on this month. Have Jason Cesaris and Christian Lopez, Matt Scalarid from Pink Banana Media, Margaret Cho will be back on, Cody Lassen from Broadway, get Greg Scarnici, author. So many great people coming on later this month. Thanks for listening to the Left of Straight Show. Be sure to subscribe on all of our platforms. Follow on Instagram and Twitter at Left of Straight. Have a great week. Tomorrow is the big debut of Standing on My Soapbox. If you like political activism in both the regular political sphere and for LGBT, please tune in right here on Blog Talk Radio tomorrow at 2 o'clock Pacific, 5 o'clock Eastern time. Every Wednesday we'll be talking politics and what's happening as far as LGBT activism. So thanks for tuning in. Have a great evening, and we will talk to you next time. Bye-bye.